So nothing really crazy has been happening lately. I know usually on a Monday, because today's Monday, I'm on spring break right now, and so my week schedule is all kind of messed up. And it's just messed up my week schedule. Today feels like a Saturday or a Friday, not a Monday. But it's Monday today. Today's March 11. It's March 11 already? Oh wow. See, I thought it was March 10 too. My schedule's all messed up because of a spring break. I love spring break. Never, spring break's the best, but it messes up my schedule. So, nothing has happened. There's this Biden gave the State of the Union speech on Thursday. There was the response to the State of the Union speech. Trump did a live play-by-play response to it too. It was all mediocre, okay? Trump actually had some funny things on Instagram where he used Snapchat filters on Joe Biden and Kamala Harris during the State of the Union, and that was hilarious. That was probably the funniest thing that came out of the State of the Union whatsoever. But otherwise, it was probably the worst State of the Union speech I've ever heard in my entire life. And that's saying something because I had to listen to two other Biden State of the Union speeches. So, there's some heated competition there. And the polls show it too. So when you take poll numbers, or when you look at the polls on the State of the Union for like how many people liked the State of the Union speech, it's over 60%. And you might think, wow, that means Biden's getting independence. But in reality, it doesn't mean that. The average State of the Union gets an approval speech of above 70%. Usually, if it's a mediocre one, it's in the 80s. And that's just because when the president gives that speech, the most of the people who listen to it or watch it are supporters of the president already. So the fact that it was in the 60s to low 70s of approval for Biden actually shows he's failing. I believe that is the all-time low, believe it or not, for any president, let alone Biden. And so, yeah, State of the Union was boring. If you didn't listen to it and you didn't watch it, congratulations. I applaud you because I wish I didn't. It was so boring. He was an angry man the whole time. He yelled at the camera the whole time. He yelled at Republicans the whole time. He didn't even talk about the State of the Union. It was literally just a campaign speech about Donald Trump and MAGA Republicans. But it was a terrible speech. Tis the state of our politics today. Today in politics, instead of doing your job, you just do campaign speeches and rallies the whole time and talk on social media, and you just hope that gets you support and hope it gets you reelected instead of you actually doing your job and passing good laws and supporting your constituents and yada yada yada, But it's just politics, so I guess we got to get over that. Something is interesting though is I don't know if you heard of, I obviously, about maybe a year ago now, I did this episode on Singapore, and I talked about Singapore's model on tough on crime policies. So I'm not a fan of Singapore's political system. Their political system is essentially a dictatorship. They don't, it's not one person in charge. They have I think it's a prime minister. Prime minister, then have different ministries run by different ministers, and they have a house. But all of it is run by one political party. The political party has the majority in every single area of their government, and they've had that majority for 60 years or more. So it is essentially a one-party dictatorship. And I'm not a fan of that whatsoever. I do think that even though it works for Singapore, I do think having different parties run Singapore is best. But it's worked for them, so I can't yell at them like it can North Korea. So Singapore is one of the richest countries in the world. They also have one of the lowest crime rates in the world. And that's not because they're rich. Rich countries tend to have lower crime rates, not because people there have more money, but because people there, it's actually the other way around, by the way. Countries with lower crime rates tend to grow richer instead of the other way around. Rich countries don't lower crime rates. They're rich because they're tough on crime. They got rich because, well, they got rich because they're literally a gas station for passing ships, but what helped them enormously was their tough on crime policies. If you're not tough on crime, then that money is not going to stay in your area. People are going to earn money just to lose it immediately, not in a fair transaction where they buy something, but because someone's going to steal it and spend it on drugs or something like that, and so it hurts the economy. And Singapore is very tough on crime, so that doesn't happen there. So let's talk about El Salvador. El Salvador used to be crime-ridden, full of gangs and murder rate. The murder rate there was enormous, by the way. It was terrible. And right now, their murder rate is about the same as Idaho's, and Idaho is the safest state in the United States. So, there's that. It went from one of the most unsafe nations in the world to literally the safest country to be in the Western Hemisphere. And you're, if you bring up that fact that it's not rich, you're right. This is where, this is how I know rich people don't lower crime rates. It's the other way around. El Salvador is not by any means a rich country, but their crime rate is incredibly low. It's ridiculous. Like, how successful, okay, let me try to figure out how to pronounce his name. I have to read his, the president of El Salvador has a really interesting name, and it looks super simple, but for some reason I cannot pronounce it, so I have to like sound it out every time I see it. So, Nayib Bukele. Yeah, people who are listening to this are probably just like, dude, that's so simple. How can you not pronounce that? I don't know. Nayib Bukele. It doesn't even sound like a South American name. I don't know where he got that name from, but okay. Moving on. So, Nayib Bukele was elected for his first term on the platform that he will bring El Salvador under control. He will destroy their crime-ridden communities, not the communities themselves, but the crime in those communities. He will bring them to justice. He will build the world's largest prison. Every single criminal will be brought to that prison and prosecuted severely. And you know what? That's what he did. He literally built the world's largest prison, which houses thousands upon thousands of inmates, and stuck every single gang member he could find, every single criminal he could find, into those prisons. It turns out the war on gangs isn't so much of a war if you just arrest them and throw them in prison. And guess what happened after he did that? El Salvador is now the safest country in the Western Hemisphere. Remarkable. Just absolutely remarkable. And so when I'm talking last year, when I talked about how America needs to adopt these super tough on crime policies, not just at the federal level, but at the state level, I don't mean we need a dictatorship. El Salvador, Nayib Bukele, is not a dictator. El Salvador does not have a one-party system like Singapore does. Yes, Nayib Bukele was just re-elected with over 80% of the vote. He didn't commit voter fraud to get those votes. He fixed his country to get those votes. That is what we need in America. And this should not be a, I'm a Republican, so I'm tough on crime, or I'm a Democrat, so I hate the police. This shouldn't be that type of an issue. Communities, like, people are dying every single day because someone makes a mistake. And I know a lot of people make mistakes all the time. I'm 19 years old. I've made mistakes in my life. For sure. But that doesn't mean it's right. Those people in communities who just want a safe community, who just want to be able to go to a grocery store without getting jumped, or go to a grocery store, be able to walk down aisles, pick up something off a shelf, and buy it, for crying out loud. Even that is becoming more and more rare in crime-ridden communities like California and Chicago. The simple act of buying something from a convenience store has become ridiculous just because of the crime. This isn't a Democrat or Republican issue. This isn't conservative versus liberal. There is a major problem, and every single country that has addressed this problem with tough on crime policies has gotten better significantly. Singapore never had this problem because they've always been tough on crime. El Salvador had this problem. They fixed it without a dictator. It doesn't take a dictator to do that. It literally only takes a president. The president doesn't even need to have Congress on his side. I'm not even joking either. All he needs is to have a... As long as the opposition only has a simple majority in Congress, the president can do whatever he wants in order to lower the crime rate. And the reason why is because our laws are sufficient. Our laws that go against crime right now are sufficient to lower and bring down the crime rate enormously. And the reason why I know this is because crime didn't go up because we changed the law. Crime went up because we stopped prosecuting the law. We stopped going after people who broke the law. And there's one way to fix that. And that's with the president. The president is head of the executive branch. When you're head of the executive branch, you are essentially dictator of the executive branch. Not of the people, of the executive branch. You can tell the executive branch what to do, and they have to do it. They have to, because you are their head. So Joe Biden, right now, can immediately tell the Border Patrol and everyone on the border to start rebuilding the wall. He can also tell them to start arresting every single illegal immigrant who crosses those borders and deport them immediately. He can re-implement the stay in Mexico policy through an executive order. He can do all of that through executive orders. Because he stopped doing them. He stopped all of those policies with executive orders. The only reason why we have this crisis on the border right now is because Joe Biden said, don't obey the law. We're not going to prosecute it. In order to fix this, all he has to do is say prosecute the law and it's fixed. It's not a we need to pass more legislation issue. Which, yes, more legislation would be nice. But we need to start from the ground up, not from top to bottom. Start with getting the executive branch to prosecute the crime of illegal immigration. Then pass laws as needed. And the same thing with his crime rates. Joe Biden can pass executive orders forcing any agency that is under the federal agent that is under a federal executive agency to prosecute laws, to prosecute people who disobey those laws, to throw criminals in prison. Crime rates would go down. He can also pressure states who don't prosecute criminals with their executive branches to do the same thing. And if they refuse, well, he can send. What are the federal police officers called? I'm sorry. I went on a massive rant and now I can't remember what federal police officers called. I'm going to call them Rangers. I can't remember if that's correct or not. But I'm going to call them Rangers. So forgive me if that's the wrong term. He can send the federal Rangers to those states and arrest those criminals, not for breaking state law, but for breaking federal law. Because almost every single state law that you break, you're also breaking a federal law. Almost always. Crime rates would go down. There's a reason why Florida, during spring break, increased their law presence, the law enforcement presence, before spring break started, so that anyone who breaks laws in Florida would go to jail. They'd be prosecuted, they'd be punished severely for it. You can go to Florida, you can celebrate spring break, you can go to the zoo, you can go to the beach, you can go to Orlando, you can do whatever you want in Florida as long as it's legal, but the instant you break that law, and since you break any law, you're getting prosecuted. And when I say the increased law enforcement, I don't just mean that they sent a few state troopers with a few nice cars to Orlando, Miami, and Tampa. No, they literally have law enforcement drones deployed right now. And guess what? It's working. There have been no massive increases in crime in Florida so far. And any tiny increase in crime was punished immediately by an arrest. And prosecuted. That is good. That's amazing. That's what we need nationwide. What's happening? What happened in Florida during spring break, right before spring break started? What happened in El Salvador? What's going on in, or what happened in Singapore? These tough on crime policies, they're not just a Republican policy. It's a common sense policy that Republicans have held for the longest time. The only reason why there's polarization around this right now is because crime went up and Republicans are like, hey, let's use this common sense policy called tough on crime. And Democrats said no. They said no because Republicans are for it. We're in this state as a country right now where if one party supports something, the other party thinks they have to go against it. And it's not just Democrats who do that, it's Republicans too. So it's an issue. A real issue. For example, any bill supporting Ukraine. I'm going to be honest with you. I do not want the American government supporting the Ukrainian government. I want the American government going against the Russian military. That is our interest in Ukraine. Our interest in Ukraine is not the Ukrainian government. The Ukrainian government is corrupt and oligarchic as it is. That's not our interest. our interest in Ukraine is stopping the Russian military while testing out our new toys. That's our interest in Ukraine. We send Ukraine weapons so we can test our strategies without needing to go to war, so we can grease our wheels, our gears, our military industrial complex, get it moving, get it started, before there's any major conflict in Southeast Asia or in the Middle East that involves us directly. That is our interest in Ukraine. So if we send Ukraine weapons, I'm fine with that. But if we fund their government, I'm not fine with that. But that's not the point that I'm getting. The point I'm getting at here is Democrats. So Democrats here are all for, they're not just for sending Ukraine weapons, they're for sending the Ukrainian government as well, money as well. And for some odd reason, Republicans, most Republicans, go against it just because Democrats are for it. So Democrat says they're for sending Ukraine weapons, a Republican immediately goes against it because a Democrat is for it. That's not how this is supposed to work. Republicans, I'm a Republican, so I'm speaking from like the inside of the party here. We need to support sending weapons to Ukraine because we're going against the Russian military, not because we like the Ukrainian government. Same thing in Syria. We need to support the Democratic Syria group, not because we're in favor of the Syrian government, because we're not, but because we're against the Russian military. It's pretty common sense to me, but common sense isn't very common anymore, so yeah, I can understand why a lot of people don't see it as common sense. But the stuff on crime policy stuff, it needs to be implemented. It really does. Well, that was the episode for today. Yeah, not much has happened this week or last week. State of the Union, but it was so incredibly boring. It's not even worth talking about for more than 5 minutes. So if you didn't watch it, good job. I wish I didn't. Yeah, thank you guys for tuning in, and catch you later. God bless you. Adios.